Hello, everyone. Welcome to the NRF1 podcast on Acast, on iTunes, on Future Radio in Norwich, and celebrating the best of British in Formula One and a truly epic race weekend at Silverstone. It's why we love it. It's why we love the racing. It's why we love Silverstone. It's why we love the British Grand Prix. What a weekend to be alive! And that's ignoring tennis. We got loads to get through, some of it breaking. It was, as I said, a great weekend for Britain in terms of everything minus one thing. But we'll get onto that in a moment. My name is Michael Bailey. I am joined by Stephen Rust, Josh Raymond and Kyle Cumbers to talk through all the joys and events of the race weekend at Silverstone, which I'm assuming we all absolutely lapped up. Now, Kyle, you're only just back from the Euros. Would you have, I mean, which is best, the Euros or Formula One?
That's a tough answer. I don't know, Euros was probably once in a lifetime to watch a semi-final, a major tournament, but I would have liked to have been at Silverstone on Sunday. It's 50-50, I can't decide.
You can like them both, it's absolutely fine. I have to say, it's a couple of years now since I was covering the British Grand Prix there for all 4 days, which I loved doing. I did it for 3 or 4 years. I did miss it this year. And to be honest, Lewis has started winning ever since. I never saw a British winner, and since I stopped going. So it's 3 years, isn't it? Because he's on a hat-trick. He's completed his hat-trick. So it's 3 years since I went. Lewis Hamilton's won ever since. Lucky boy. Josh, you've been busy?
I guess so, yeah.
You climbed some mountains and did some karting?
Yeah, walked some hills, yeah. I don't think I've been karting again. I'm this weekend back at Donington.
Looking forward to it?
Yeah, it's going to be good. The boys have been out every weekend, I think, since the team I race with. They've been out every weekend since I've been there, so I've kind of been seeing pictures going, I want to go back in it. Oh. Want to go?
Only on the NRF1 podcast have we got an official super carter on the panel. I don't know if it is only us, but we do have that.
Statistically, it's probably quite likely.
We'll take it, absolutely. We're nothing wrong with bending the rules. Steve Rust, did you enjoy the spectacle of Silverstone?
It was brilliant. I loved it. It's best race of the whole season, always.
And was it actually this year the best race of the season so far? Because it had a bit of everything, I thought.
Yeah, I'd give it that. I was just trying to cast my mind back to some of the races. I know there was one or two good ones that stuck out, but let's give it to Silverstone.
It was good because you had a facial expression that's similar to mine, which is, I can't remember any of the other races, which I have to say, they do all blur into one. But let's deal in the present, or the recent past at least. Silverstone, Lewis Hamilton, NRF1. Our Twitter feed at the NRF1 tweeted it. I don't know who wrote it, but someone wrote it. We love Lewis Hamilton in a fit of emotional pique after he took the checkered flag for his third successive British Grand Prix win, his fourth at Silverstone, making him the most successful British driver at Silverstone. He's now only one win behind Jim Clark's all-encompassing every venue British Grand Prix record of 5. Do we all love Lewis Hamilton, or was that overblown?
Oh, he's a superstar. He's brilliant for British motorsport. He's brilliant for F1. You know, we should appreciate British motorsport, and he is one of the best ever. And he's just building on his legendary status by, we'll look back in 20 years on this 3 years of winning, possibly 4 or 5, and just shows his dominance at this time.
Box office, Eddie Jordan said. Box office, and I don't often quote Eddie Jordan.
Me neither, for various reasons. Best British driver ever, in my opinion. I think he'll take some beating, and I think when he leaves the sport in many, many years to come, I think it'll leave a gaping great hole. But in the meantime, I think it's brilliant for the British fans. I think he's a good role model for youngsters coming into the sport, or possibly coming into the sport. And, you know, I think can't get much better than that, really.
Interesting you say that, because of course one of the stories in the week we were away was that he trashed a hotel room after he was it
denied, really, wasn't
well,
it
he, yeah, Lewis kind of said no, it didn't happen, and I think he was a bit annoyed that Niki Lauda decided to spread. So, I mean, typical Niki Lauda, I suppose. When was he supposed to have done this?
Baku qualifying,
wasn't it? That was right. So we didn't do that, but we quite like the idea, and I think Lewis probably quite likes the idea that he may have done it. We saw him crowd surfing, we saw, aside from everything he did on track, which was brilliant, just the way he encompassed the race weekend, he looks like someone who's nailed it, who's got it, who knows exactly what he's doing. He's loving what he's doing. He's appreciating it. It's not that he's lost his hunger, which I think a few of us may have maybe thought that he would. It's that he's so certain in what he's doing and what he can do that it's almost immense freedom to deliver it.
I think I agree with that, yeah. It's pace all weekend was spectacular. I think in qualifying, to pull out that lap with no banker,
And yeah, a lap record in Q2 as well.
And that, yeah. I think he went around and was sort of like, what's he, 7 tenths quicker than Nico in one session? I mean, that's it. When you're that dominant, the only person you can be is your teammate. To do it that convincingly in this era is quite impressive. I mean, I'm thinking back to kind of like the 80s. You quite regularly see a 1.5 second gap between drivers and teams, but that doesn't happen anymore. Not
no. Unless your teammate's Lewis, which in fairness to Nico, he did say he had quite a tough teammate earlier on in the season. I mean, it wasn't just the race section, which we'll get into too, but he spoke really well in some interesting interviews he did with Channel 4 and Steve Jones. I mean, rather hit or miss at times anyway, but I was really interested in how Lewis was speaking, and as I said, his drive to win another championship, he said, was greater than ever, and you kind of absorbed that with him as well. And he said for himself, he's eyeing pole record, which I guess the interview was done before the race and before he did qualifying, so that would have been the focus of his mind, but he's only 10 poles off Senna's record of 65 career pole positions, and I guess when you've already matched his driver's titles, that's the next goal.
Well, I guess it must be, really, or to start bettering some of, you know, his hero and Senna's records. I mean, if he wins the championship this year, that'll be one more championship than Senna. I think he's actually broken some of his own sort of records, so I think he's steadily making his way through all of his hero Senna's records and many other British or other fellow British drivers as well, and so on and so forth. So
he's on it.
I think the qualifying record's quite an interesting one because it's such a different beast of the session than it was a long time ago, in terms of, like, in the 80s it's sticking a 1,000 bhp quali special engine in that would only last 5 laps, stick on tyres that would only go 2 laps, and then just sort of send them out and see what would happen. Nowadays you have to actually think about, oh, I've got to race these. You have to race on the tyres that you qualify
in Q2.
In Q2, okay. Yeah. And just sort of generally managing that sort of thing.
But again, that's the car that he broke the lap record with. Yeah. So an unbelievable effort. And
he set 3 lap times that were good enough for pole over the session or something like that.
Should have given him the first 3 boxes. I mean, in such a challenging condition, the rain came down, it was a wet start, it was a fascinating race. It started under the safety car. It was almost remarkable how calm, collected and in control most of the time Lewis was compared to everyone else. And he seemed to be in control even during qualifying. On the flip side of this, we have to reflect on Nico Rosberg and the way he's dealt with things. We've just found out this evening that Mercedes have withdrawn their appeal against Nico's 10-second penalty for being advised how to drive the car by his engineer over race radio, which the FIA has decided wasn't allowed. The 10-second penalty knocked him down to 3rd behind Max Verstappen, who finished 2nd, which is another subject that desperately needs addressing. But let's just get stuck into the Mercedes issues, shall we? I mean, I thought that the penalty was actually quite light, given these rules were, you know, supposed to be quite important. Obviously, Mercedes sort of thought that it wasn't, and now they've maybe agreed that actually, yeah, fair enough, we'll take the 10 seconds.
Yeah, because I don't agree with the rules in general, but that probably saved his car in a way, or helped him save his car. So it's probably worth the penalty for future. You know, you could be in the lead by 15 seconds, and if you know that you can make an adjustment to save the car, then it's worth doing. So, and also, just so many grey areas on this rule. I mean, he was allowed to... They advised him on which mode to go into, but then they couldn't advise Hamilton in Baku.
Well, I've heard the Baku stuff back again today, and it seems remarkable how differently they dealt with him. And I'm pretty sure in the podcast last time out, I said, look, just advise him and then deal with the consequences afterwards, yeah. Which is kind of what they've actually done this time around. So maybe they were listening. NRF1, changing F1 for the more confusing, probably.
But I suppose, I don't know if the engineer at the end could have said, I don't know, Rosberg saying, shall I just go through it? Is that much different from when he said, don't use it? Is that just purely driver coaching, that bit? Or it just complicates it more than F1 should be complicated.
Nothing like being confused by uncomplicated things. I mean, I thought David Coulthard made an interesting point that no one worried in Apollo 13 that they were hearing what the instructions were being. It's just a question of that being part of how you get the thing to work, not necessarily delivering a driver to drive a car properly. You know, they've still got to be the one who does it.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it is there's certainly a line. I mean, if you're starting to say, oh, you need to turn at this point and brake here and accelerate here, then yeah, that's driver coaching. But to say you need to change the mode to this very specific setting, I don't see. And even to an extent, I mean, it is the rule, and I understand that that's why he's got the penalty, but the being told how to drive around an engine problem, I think potentially that it doesn't seem like it's gaining an advantage in terms of driving the car faster. It's just telling him how not to brake it, which I think is a fair thing the team should be able to tell him. I mean, until they're not allowed two-way telemetry, they're not allowed to change these settings, so the compromise was they told the driver how to do it and gave him a steering wheel with 100 different dials on it. What's the point of those if he then has to spend 3 months of the year learning it, because it will change? I'm sure it will change each year on year too. I don't know, it's a strange development, I find.
So do we think the penalty was harsh? Yeah, the 10-second penalty, right? Harsh, right? Okay.
It's probably harsh, really, but I really don't know. I don't know. I don't agree with driver coaching, but it just creates so many grey areas, because is driver coaching, because he's telling him what to do for the gears, but then I didn't agree with, like I say, which gear to go through which corner, but then I also think, well, they get to know that afterwards and before the race and during practice when they sit in the garage. So is there much difference from telling them when they're going around?
I mean, I've said before, I thought that the rules on this is totally ridiculous. But I mean, as it is the rules and we have to abide by it, I thought it was quite lenient. Because the thing is like, now, are they going to set a bit of a precedent where teams can go, well, OK, if we are in this situation, it looks like we're probably going to get a 10-second penalty. And it's either that or the car stops on track and we get a DNF. And I think most teams are going to take the first one. So, you know, I think they probably, on that note, probably should have made a bit of a stance on it and sort of said, I don't know, maybe disqualification would have been a bit harsh, but I mean, maybe a further penalty than what they gave, because I think it just leaves it a little bit sort of open for teams to maybe abuse that. But I still think it's totally ridiculous. I mean, it's like Josh said, it's not driver coaching as such. You know, I mean, it was a technical problem. They're highly technical cars, and they need managing. I mean, are we going to have race drivers trained up as engineers so they, you know, they know what to do? I mean, how far do you go with that? I mean, that's ridiculous, really.
I mean, I thought it was ludicrous in Bacau as well, when Lewis was on the radio going, I'm just going to start pressing buttons and see what happens. I mean, that's a fair response to that frustrating situation, but he shouldn't have ever been in that situation in the first place.
Also, Anthony Davidson said on Sky coverage that in his Toyota Le Mans car, he doesn't know what some of the settings and buttons do on his steering wheel.
Well, they can get outside assistance to repair the car. They've got a mobile satellite phone that they can actually phone the pit wall and find out how to repair their car. As long as they don't go out of that 50-metre radius of the car, they have basic tools and a phone to figure out how to repair a car, which...
Wow. Yeah. It's a different world, isn't it?
I always thought, with moaning about the team radios and stuff, then why doesn't FOM or whoever broadcasters don't broadcast those messages? If they're worried about the show, just don't broadcast them.
Well, you mentioned the show. I mean, it's interesting, half of this feels a bit like the peril factor. They want cars to break because the drivers don't need to sort it, just like they want curbs that slash your car so that even if you go slightly offline, you get taken off into the wall. And I guess that comes down to the show a little bit as well. So as it is, Nico Rosberg leads by just a point after that 10-second penalty, and therefore dropping behind Max Verstappen. The one issue I really had, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, was the booing of Nico Rosberg on the podium. Now, I didn't like it. Opinions on Nico Rosberg, I don't think he's very good compared to Lewis Hamilton. Let me rephrase that. I don't think he's as good as Lewis Hamilton. I think Lewis is a much better racer. I think if Nico wins a championship, it'll be a kind of a, you know, throw enough at something, eventually it sticks, and that would be this year's driver's title. But that doesn't mean that he should be being booed if he ends up on the podium for having, you know, I know he drove into Lewis in Austria, but that's all right. We all talked about it and loved it afterwards. You don't then go and boo him. And it just didn't feel like it was very pantomime, because at no point did they then sort of reflect and applaud him either. I just expected more of the British crowd.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. It's not really very sporting, as you would sort of say, but I mean, what probably made it worse is that because they interviewed Lewis first, and he sort of said, you know, it's great, because obviously he got booed in the previous race on the podium, and he says, great that we haven't got
the seed.
he said, we haven't got any boo, and it shows what great fans we had. And then they went to Nico and everybody started booing. And I was just sort of thinking, oh no, you know, I mean, did he, were they doing that as a bit of a joke because what he said, or was, were they planning to do that anyway? I don't know, but.
It's a fair point. Yeah. It's a fair point.
It's quite a British reaction though, isn't it? It's like, oh, you lot don't boo, do you? It's like, all right then, see this.
So what we did, what we actually saw was the best of British humour. Yeah, is that what we're going to say? All right, we'll take that. At one point, we're not going to discuss this. We're going to leave it. I'm sure it's going to come up in future. Nico Rosberg won the first four races. The two cars smashed each other. Two Mercedes smashed each other in Spain. Since then, Lewis Hamilton's won four of the last five. Boom.
It's a bit like 2014, isn't it? When they collided in Spa. I think Hamilton won eight of the next nine. It does seem that he obviously deals with these situations and these talks from Toto Wolff a bit better than Nico does.
Right, a couple of quick reminders. NRF1.uk is the website for blogs, tips and more. Keep an eye out of that as the season goes. We're busy doing a few bits and bobs, and hopefully there'll be some interesting things for you to keep an eye out on there. Lots of fun things in the pipeline. And that is, all comes by way of Patreon, where our merry band of patrons growing. We're getting more patrons on board, and hopefully that will continue as the season goes on, helping us spread the NRF1 word. As I said, we're changing NRF1. We're changing F1 for the better by means of our opinions, ideas, and general love of the sport. That's our manifesto. People have been elected on less. If you want to get involved, patreon.com, patreon.com/NRF1. It's cheaper than it's ever been because the pound is so low against the dollar, which is what it measures it in. Get involved, literally, it's a snip. And we can help spread the word, get a bit of advertising, get more people involved, and enjoy the fun and games. I hope that was an important message, Steve. Go on. Now it's gone off. I'm playing the journalist role now. What's the message?
It was actually WhatsApp from our WhatsApp group of NRF1.
Well, have we got a pod tonight?
Probably.
Amazing. Well, that was more than worth it. So join us. Join our Patreons. Become a member. You'll get a lovely thank you on the podcast, and we'll keep you in touch with lots of fun things too. And of course, iTunes. Get on there and give us a rate and a review if you're listening now and you like what we do. Or if you don't, possibly. But, you know, if you have an opinion, if you think, you know, Kyle is the best person you've ever heard speak about Formula One since Steve and Josh, then just say that. Give us a rating that's sort of, you know, three or more. Because I guess below three is counterproductive. But, you know, we're all for free opinion and free speech. Anyway, you can do that at nrf1.uk/isonitunes. Brilliant. Right, you are listening to the NRF1 podcast on Acast on Future Radio. It is time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. Now, I can't help thinking that we are running a kind of familiar pattern here. We talk about Mercedes a lot at the start, and then we get to the pit stops and we talk about Max Verstappen. Because this guy... It's ridiculous what he's doing. He beat Daniel Ricciardo for the first time in qualifying. Thanks for the giggle there, Carl. It was the highest place start for a teenager since 1961, I think, in the British Grand Prix. I think that stat is. He's now got three podiums, and he already has more podiums than his dad, Jos. Max has three podiums in 29 Formula One races, but I guess about four for Red Bull. And Jos had two from 106. I mean, and then that's without mentioning his overtake around the outside on Nico Rosberg in the wet. What are we looking at here? Because for me, it's phenomenal.
It's scary how quick he is. I mean, during qualifying, he's consistently sort of 3-4 tenths quicker than Ricciardo. And we've all raved about Ricciardo and how quick he is around Silverstone, a proper driver's track. How many world titles could he, if he stays in competitive teams, how many world titles could he win? I don't think Schumacher's record would be broken, but it looks like it could be with him.
But let's put this into context then. If he was in a Mercedes now, he would probably win the driver's title, do you wonder? I mean, same like him alongside Lewis would be phenomenal. But the problem is, I guess, Red Bull isn't really a title-winning car at the moment, and ultimately that's part of the game, isn't it?
That's the decision he made, isn't it? Because Mercedes were courting him before he signed for F1, so
With Nico out of contract at the end of this year at the moment, supposedly, and certainly not confirmed, and we don't believe what Niki Lauda says anymore.
It'd have been an interesting parallel world though, wouldn't it?
I mean, and the last podcast, or it may have been the one before, I can't remember now, it's almost into one big race, but I sort of asked the question, should Daniel be worried? And I think, you know, might have been DT, he said, no, he doesn't need to be worried. He's got his seat booked until 2018. But the narrative here is significant because from being a top driver, Daniel doesn't even look like the best driver in his team at the moment.
No, he doesn't. And I mean, he could have potentially have been looking at, I mean, if Red Bull and in the future produces a championship winning car, he could have potentially been that next world champion in that seat. But now Verstappen's come along, that doesn't really look very likely at all. You know, and I mean, even if Red Bull couldn't have produced it for him before Verstappen came along, I mean, his opportunity now to maybe jump into like a Ferrari seat, I mean, I know that's now gone, but I mean, a seat like that in the future is now looking pretty distant as well, because I mean, he's just the forgotten about man in the last 2, 3, 4 races of Red Bull. Everybody's talking about Verstappen.
We'll talk about Kimi in a bit, I'm sure, but he is signed now until 2017 at Ferrari. Yay! And that's the end of one of my predictions as well, because I've genuinely thought he'd be done for this year. I genuinely can't believe it's like Ferrari couldn't be to find anyone else. What more impressive, I found a picture of Kimi smiling while I was at Snetterton at the British Superbikes the weekend. I took a picture of it, obviously, and I will make sure it ends up on the Twitter feed and Facebook page, facebook.com/NRF1podcast.
Was it in the calf?
The picture is in the calf. It's not him eating an ice cream in the calf.
What was it, the Formula Renault days?
I think it was, yeah. It was a lot. He looks young, hence smiling, probably. But there we go. Anyway, but just touching on Max, I mean, I'm not sure where he's up to in the driver's standings now, but I think I saw he's on 90 points now, and he's not far behind Daniel at all. Notice how I don't call him Ricciardo anymore, because it's just too much effort, so I'll call him Daniel. But he's properly closing in, as are Red Bull on Ferrari as well. I mean, they're going to end up P2 in the Constructors' Championship at this rate, aren't they, Josh?
It seems so, doesn't it? I mean, they tend to be the best of the rest, I guess, after Mercedes. It seems to be consistent at the moment. I believe that'll potentially carry on, apart from, I was going to say the power circuits, but Britain's Silverstone's pretty much big straights all the way around, so.
Absolutely spot on.
So yeah, he's 10 points behind Daniel at the moment, so.
It's not many, is it?
It's not many at all.
Not the way he's going.
No.
Not at all. Okay, well, we touched on Ferrari then. Sebastian Vettel had more gearbox woe, another 5-place gear penalty, and basically it's a bit of a disaster. I'm sure we're going to touch on that. Might be a good conversation for the German Grand Prix, possibly. McLaren, no points for them at their home race either. Jenson Button, 17th British Grand Prix, 17th podium failure. But I don't think that was ever on the cards this year. Amazing confusion in qualifying, though, when he thought he was out in Q1, had to run back thinking he would get back in, and then Renault was saying, no, Magnussen's time did stand, which basically comes down to the track limits. Now, we could have a conversation about this, or we could just write it off as the biggest load of it is. Anyone really fussed about this whole track limits debate, and is it worth anything?
I quite like they mentioned about Jonathan Palmer's installed pressure pads and cameras at his circuits, the MSV group circuits, because I got caught out by those at Brands Hatch last year.
So what are they?
So they put pressure pads on the outside curb, so I got caught at Graham Hill Bend at Brands Hatch.
So a sensor to tell if you've gone over.
And then an automatic picture. And in car racing, there's some automatic penalty that you get if you do that.
Wow.
So yeah, they were walking up and down the paddock with the carts, having a quiet word with each driver that they found doing that. The worst thing was, like, it's about gaining an advantage on them. I lost 4 or 5 cart lengths doing that because the go-karts do not negotiate those curbs very well.
No,
but I still got in trouble.
Great point, though. What a great way to actually deal with this in future. Clearly, the cars should stay between, keep all four wheels between the two white lines. That is basically the rule of racing around a track. So I have no issue with that. Have the sensors all the way around the track or at certain points where it's really important. Automatically flashes up that a car's gone off. Automatic penalty or something on their time added, and away you go. I think that'd be great. And it would solve the problem.
Like the I liked the zero tolerance. I think, you know, if you go wide at cops, that you've gained an advantage. Unless you've gone, like, into the barrier, in which case I think you wouldn't finish your lap anyway.
And it was interesting. It was obviously certain corners where you get an advantage as opposed to others where you might run off, but actually that's going to cost you a tenth or two. So, all right, well, that's track limits, per way. And Button's confusion, hilarious. Williams had another pretty miserable time of it, didn't they, really? Didn't do much of anything again. It was a very interesting chat with Claire Williams on Channel 4's coverage at the end. She was sat in the hospitality, looking quite miserable. She was quite honest. She explained that they really have got to sort it out because it's not an issue and they don't really have a clue, to which point David Coulthard mentioned that people should write in with their suggestions. And Claire was like, yeah, do it, write in, yeah. Which was great and quite honest. But then there's a bit of me at the back that's like, that's also quite worrying. You need to get a handle on this.
It is, really. I mean, I think it's... We've praised him in the past for doing well with a very, very small budget, but... I mean, are we now looking at them just getting left behind because of that small budget? I mean, they have had, in recent years, they have had some fairly reasonable seasons, you know. I mean, they've always had their off weekends, but this is probably the longest period now in a race season where they've just been, well, let's be honest, pretty hopeless.
Yeah. I don't have to beep it, Steve, which is a bit of a shame, but you mean you could say they've been f***ing atrocious.
You said it, beep.
It's not like I do it deliberately. I swear it's not. Maybe no one else enjoys the beeps, it's only me. I don't know, but there we go. Okay, the only other thing I wanted to mention was Marcus Ericsson's crash. It was quite a nasty one, wasn't it? And I mean, he was not allowed to take part in qualifying. The accident took place in FP3, I think, wasn't it? So it was a matter of getting the car together, but I don't think he was passed well enough in terms of the impact of the accident to compete in qualifying. But he did race. Although he didn't last very long, I think, did he? And neither did the car. So it just sort of wasn't there.
Yeah, it was an engine problem, which is probably sounds like probably had to rebuild the car after seeing the car at the end of that accident. So,
but you know, he's an honorary Norfolk boy. He's not in the Hall of Fame, Marcus. We haven't decided on the first entrance into that yet. But at least he was okay after, you know, a real big old impact. Right then, well, let's move on, shall we? You are listening to the NRF1 podcast. On Acast, on iTunes, and on Future Radio, as I'm sure you're all aware, let's have our of the weekends. The pick of the best for Silverstone. Let's rattle through them, shall we? I've got quite a lot written down here, so let's get through them as quickly as possible. Our Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend. I reckon there's two major suggestions. Anyone got any more? Hamilton and Max?
Yeah, I agreed.
Vote.
Hamilton. But can you have two? Can you have two?
You could just share it. Do you want to share it this weekend?
Yeah, between the two of them, I think they deserve it. Yeah, two.
I'll allow you to do that this weekend, Steve.
It was 60-40 to Max Lewis.
That's that. That'd probably be good.
Well, I think I'm going to give it to Lewis. That was an incredible weekend. Yeah.
Literally split down the middle. Fair enough. The only other one I was going to add was Mark Webber. Now, I know he wasn't actually racing, but I thought his insight... It's top notch, and to be honest, so good that Sky will probably ring him up in the close season and say, come work for us for lots more money. Team of the weekend. I struggled with this one a bit. Anyone?
Red Bull, possibly,
because Ricciardo came home
fourth,
and they are making progress as a team, aren't they? Certainly.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I mean, well, that or Mercedes, but I mean, Mercedes is a bit of an obvious one, isn't it? But
they did withdraw their appeal and they managed to stop their drivers crashing into each other, so I suppose it was pretty good effort from Mercedes.
Thanks to the safety car.
Yeah, that helped. We didn't even talk about the safety car, did we? Never mind. In fact, our look ahead to Hungary, hopefully the DATS lifeguards will be looking ahead to safety car starts, which, yeah, Kyle's noise just made there. We're not going to get into it now, Kyle, don't worry. Our pastor of the weekend, I would like to nominate Renault, mainly for Jolyon Palmer driving off with only three wheels on his wagon, and it didn't keep rolling along.
Nico Rosberg's race engineer.
I have to back Renault. I mean, I read that they didn't actually put it on. It didn't fall off.
They literally didn't even put a wheel on.
Yeah, what do you call it? The sign guy just let him go before the fourth wheel was on.
So yeah, why not? See how you get on, mate. Can't be any slower with four than we are with four.
I'll probably go for, I mean, it was on the safety car start, but Charlie Whiting for taking so long to get rid of it. And also Renault, because, yeah.
Because, yeah. Highlights, then, of the weekend. Go, what's your highlight?
Lewis Hamilton's pole lap.
Oh.
It was all that or the one that he broke the record on. Either one would be fine.
Yeah. Good shout, Steve.
Lewis trying to overtake the safety car at Cups. I mean, that's ballsy.
Running into the back of it. I think it caught him out a little bit, but at least his brakes worked, which I think was the idea.
probably Verstappen's overtaking Rosberg around the outside. That was pretty cool.
Yes, absolutely wonderful moments from the Grand Prix, absolutely. The only other things I wanted to add, the grid walk with Mark Webber and DC, where you're normally like, oh God, this is going to be horrendous. Then it started raining and it was brilliant. There was absolutely fascinating viewing, although still quite cringeworthy in places. Lewis Hamilton crowd surfing, obviously. Any other drivers we know who crowd surfed? I mean, Lewis must have been saving that up for years, I should think. Not that I can think of. Lewis Hamilton's trophy throw in the air as well. I mean, that wasn't the original trophy, I hope, because it seemed very light and it went a long way in the air. He caught it.
You'd hope not, but I think it's his sort of signature now, isn't it? And he's getting pretty good at catching them, but he's bound to drop one soon.
One time he's going to drop one. Don't drop the ball, Lewis. The pit releases after the safety car. The safety car comes in, everyone goes nuts. And basically, did anyone get penalised for an unsafe release in that period? I don't think they did they? And it was hilarious because they were literally just pulling out in front of each other. No one hit anyone, though, fair to say, which is amazing. And just Pascal Verlaine's crash, the spray from the onboard picture of his crash where he aquaplaned, it just... I don't know how they drive in those conditions because you're like, we can't see the corner. I thought it was incredible. But there we go. I think that covered most of my highlights. There were quite a lot of them. Oh, that, and special mention for Richard Baxter, who can't be with us tonight. He mentioned David Coulthard's crash of the McLaren in Channel 4's coverage. He had a McLaren P1. I don't know which McLaren it was. Yeah, their actual road car. And he drove it into a camera by accident because he was too busy faffing around with Steve Jones. You have to watch it. Yeah, it was a bit. And but that meant that they had a reason to show Coulthard's, I think it was his massive smash at Spa when he started off an accident where everyone crashed into everyone. Yes. Was it Spa? Yeah, I think it was Spa. Yeah. I mean, amazing footage that is as well. But there we go. All worth it. Great job, I thought, by Channel 4 this weekend. Well done to them. Top effort. They're properly settling into it. Right. I think we're going to wrap this up now, unless anyone has any other business. No, right, brilliant. Let's move it on then. We will be back next week with our look ahead to Hungary. We'll also bring you all the latest Formula One news and talking points. We're going to get stuck into the safety car starts as well as Kimi's new contract at Ferrari. Boo. Don't boo.
He could be all right again.
He's actually third in the championship now, isn't he?
He could win it. He could win it.
True.
Go on, Kimi. Bet he finishes ahead of Nico. Anyway. So nrf1.uk. Apologies if the website hasn't been directing to the proper place recently, but it should be working now. nrf1.uk for our blogs, tips, and prediction league news, all the social media feeds and more. Twitter at the NRF1, facebook.com/NRF1podcast. Or please get in touch with us. Send us your predictions for the prediction league, the best prediction league in Formula One ever, according to us. That is, just email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. As I said, we'll have the Hungary preview, all the prediction league updates and the latest F1 news to follow in the podcast next week. Until then, Steve, thank you so much. Josh, thank you. Good luck with your karting. When are you next karting?
This weekend. I'll be at Donington.
Good luck, my man. Do it for Norfolk. Kyle, any more semi-finals or major championship finals to go to?
Nothing planned at the moment, but you never know.
Fingers crossed. And thank you all for listening. We really appreciate your ears. And there are more of you listening than the last time I said that, which is quite remarkable. So let's keep that up and keep spreading the word. Until next time, goodbye. And in Lewis we trust.